well. Damn. Bitch, you guessed it.
You was right.
Bitch, you guessed it. Glah, glah, fuck nigga on sight. Bitch, you guessed it. Still in that place.
Welcome to the Ferguson Response Network podcast. I'm your host, at Leslie Mack, and you are joining us for a very special episode of the Ferguson Response Network podcast called Bitch, You Tried It, because it seemed like everybody in America was trying it this week. If this is your first time joining us, you can find us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio at Ferguson Response, or you can find us on our website at FergusonResponse.org. If you have actions coming up in your area or looking and getting involved in the Black Lives Matter movement, you can visit FergusonResponse.tumblr.com, and you can find me on Twitter at LeslieMAC. We are, of course, a weekly podcast devoted to supporting citizens working to create lasting change through sustained civil disobedience and civic action. We had such a robust conversation. We actually broke the Bitch, You Tried It episode into two parts. So this is actually part two. I'm joined, as always, by my wonderful co-host, Ricky L. Hines II, Los Angeles native, U.S. Navy veteran, avid Googler, blogger, founder of the Americans United Again movement, and host of two other podcasts, the Americans United Again podcast, and co-host of the AUA Hope podcast. I'm also joined by my longtime friend, college roommate, and all-around awesome person, Tia Marr, who is a Northwestern graduate in the class of 1997, high school teacher in Chicago suburbs for 18 years, a dean for 4 years, and she's passionate about implementing programs for at-risk youth. And because he couldn't help himself, Very White Guy himself jumped into the mix. You can find him online at Very White Guy. We jump right into the conversation discussing the non-traversy of the Black Lives Matter assembly held at Oak Park River Forest High School in the Chicagoland area. Enjoy. So, turning matters at hand to Oak Park River Forest High School.
Woo-woo!
And Black Lives Matter event. So, T, I'm going to let you just talk about the event itself, because I know I saw your tweets and your posts on Facebook during it. Just you were so excited about it. So talk a little about the planning and kind of what took place during the meeting itself.
Well, the whole concept of the idea stemmed from a group of students of color, actually, that wanted to stage a walkout for Black Lives Matter. When, you know, this whole Black Lives Matter started, the Black Lives Matter event started. So the principal, was approached about these students wanting to walk out, and so he decided that he would want them to participate in an alternative type of protest. So he said, how about we all just get together and have a discussion about some of our experiences as students of color in this building and teachers of color. So he organized.
Let me stop you right there real quick. I just want to be clear that the students wanted to walk out, and this sensible principal said, you know what? Let's make this an educational moment and let's talk about this.
Absolutely.
Ourselves, okay. Safe and I wouldn't say closed, but
a safe environment.
A safe environment. Yeah. And let's be real, at any age, right? I mean, I'm talking as adults, 40-year-olds I go to church with. White people cannot speak openly and honestly about their experiences with race and racism when black people are around. They're just not honest. The inverse would obviously be true. Mm-hmm. Black people are going to be
Fear of being misunderstood, for fear of being attacked, for fear of being offended.
Absolutely.
For lots of multiple reasons, right. So his idea was to have this assembly during the last two periods of the school day and wrap up the Black History Month with this event, because we had hosted a couple of other events throughout the month for Black History Month. So he had invited a panel of students of color to have a Q&A session, and also a panel of teachers of color to have a Q&A session. I was one of those teachers. Then all of the students of color were invited to attend. Not everybody did, but as you can see from the photo, it was packed. That auditorium holds about 450 students. And, you know, the students that were not allowed in were white students, and there were some that tried to get in as we started the forum, and they were told, no, this is only for students of color. So we had a productive conversation. The students of color on the panel were answering questions about what it's like to be onlys. Everybody knows that an only is you're in an honors class. You're the only black person in the class. So you struggle with feelings of isolation. You struggle with feelings of, I'm not good enough to be here. People might think I'm stupid if I speak up and say something. And I might not even feel like the teacher thinks I belong here. So it's a very difficult situation for a student of color to be in. And the students had talked about how they felt
and they
very
also feel
isolated
like
in those classes. And the teachers talked down to them.
Right. And they also feel like they're representing like the black race.
Yes. Yeah. So anytime topics come up with about slaves or any historic topics of black people come up, people always look to them and, well, tell us about the black experience. Like that one person knows the entire black experience. So we had a very good discussion. We talked about using the N-word. We talked about how we are treated in the community as within the school in terms of behavior problems and hallway issues, how there seems to be harsher consequences or more write-ups for students of color than there are for white counterparts who commit the same offenses. One student brought up a story about being late to class. He and another a white student walked in at the same time. The teacher told the student of color to go get a tardy pass, but let the white student continue on to class. So lots of disparities of the way they felt that they were treated compared to white students. And the teacher panel even revealed some stories about how teachers are still treated treated unfairly in the school. One teacher brought up a story about she was in a staffing for a special ed student, and the chair of the staffing asked her to comment on her community college experience because the student was hoping to attend community college. Now, this teacher had gone to Ohio State on a full ride scholarship. So she was looking at the chair like, I wouldn't be able to speak on that because I went to Ohio State. And she's like, oh, I'm so sorry. Maybe you can speak on the student needing financial aid. Can you recommend some programs where they might be able to get some financial assistance? And she said, well, no, I had a full ride scholarship, but I'd be more than happy to look up some things and advise it. And come to find out, this student was not even eligible for financial aid. He's a middle class student and his mom was a nurse. So financial aid really wasn't necessary. Mm. So it's just, you know, people's presumptions.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of students felt very positive after leaving this meeting. They felt like this was very needed. They were able to speak freely and openly about issues because they knew there were other people in the room that would understand. In fact, the students were snapping when they heard comments that they agreed with.
Yeah.
And we talked about one of the students made reference to, I like walking down the hallway and it's understood as a black person that I'm going to give you the head nod to say what's up, regardless of whether I know you or not.
Right.
So how we have that commonality. But in a room full of students of color, everybody understands what he means by that. And if you try to merge the students of color with non-students of color, they may not understand those issues. And like I mentioned before, they might, from a lack of understanding, they might make comments that are frustrating or offensive to other people. And then
and derail the conversation.
That, right, exactly. That ruins the whole experience.
At a minimum, they're going to be centered on whiteness. At a minimum, someone's going to center it on whiteness. Right. What you did was, well, you just said that they told you this was a great experience. So you should, before you go into more, you know, congratulations to you and the administration for doing that. That sounded like a very needed and important step. So good for you guys.
Well, awesome. I wish the whole community and the nation felt the same way because the response has been horrific. You know, it made headlines because honestly, some of the pitfalls could have been avoided. The communication about the event could have been better. And a lot of people just didn't understand what was happening. I think the communication came out at the 11th hour. So there were teachers in the building that were being asked questions about it, and they didn't really know how to respond because they didn't know what the event was. And so from the outside person, it was perceived to be an exclusive event. So people being excluded was offensive. But in reality, that's not what it was. It's just a group of people having a conversation about our experiences.
That's like saying like a football team meeting is exclusive, though. I mean, it's just a category of people that have something in common and are meeting with each other. And I also to say that it's exclusionary equals offensive. That's just a fallacy in and of itself, too.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yep. White people think that.
The first one, in fact, every time I've ever heard somebody say, well, you're making a discrimination based on skin color. That's the definition of racism. Always a white person, always accusing a black person of doing something that's exclusionary, divisive, and calling that some form of racism. I guarantee these white people are thinking that. This was racist. They had a black student meeting. That's racist.
How did the national media even – how did the Tribune – because that was the first story I saw. How did they get notified?
I'm not sure how the Tribune got notified, because the communication came out from our PR person about the event. I'm sure she sent it to the local newspaper, which is the Oak Park Leaves. And then from that, I believe it made news with Chicago. And, of course, Chicago is spiraled into national news. Sure. So I think a lot of parents were upset that their son or daughter was excluded from the event and might have notified the paper about it to complain.
Yeah, and they complained. But the complaint was like the parents who refused to be named in the Tribune, they refused to be named. They were offended, but they refused to be named. So how offended are you?
And you know what it really is? It's basically they're saying, I want to support you. I want to be an ally. And God damn it, if you don't allow me in your meeting to be an ally, I'm going to blast you and go to the press.
Well, I think you're what making kind of the big assumption that they want to be an ally.
Well, that's the
what
the,
they want to be is they want there. To know it's exactly included. What included. Was
exactly.
Said.
They're yes. offended because they weren't invited to the party. That's all that was. So they're crying about it. But there were some parents that did support it. They thought that it was a good idea, because the whole idea is to actually eventually bring everyone together to have these race talks so they could see the vision behind it, and they're okay with it. I think what's happened is that with the media, a lot of people don't actually read through and understand what this forum was supposed to be about. So they're reading the headlines, Black principal excludes white students from an event. So they're making it sound like, oh, we held a dance and white people couldn't get in, or like we held a football game and the white people couldn't get in. It wasn't even like that. And I think, you know, the misunderstanding has led to all of this anger. And I feel sorry for our principal, because he has an escort to and from school and a police officer in front of his house right now because of all this.
Wow.
Yeah. The backlash has been awful. I mean, if you've read some of the comments and the articles that people are posting, it is horrific. All because we had a conversation. Yeah.
And dared to not include the goddamn white people.
How dare we have a conversation without them? And they act like we were trying to bash white people or plan some type of conspiracy. I don't know. I don't know what they thought that we were meeting about and neglecting them from the meeting, or not including them in the meeting.
Yeah, and that's a tool that goes back to slavery. I mean, the playbook has been the same. They just changed the name of the play.
Yeah, I just want to read this one letter to the editor to the Oak Park River Force Leaves, as Tia mentioned, from State Representative LaShawn K. Ford of the 8th District. She says, as I chair the Illinois House Restorative Justice Committee, our committee acts on legislation dealing with the restoration of justice. The principle of restorative justice is to repair harm done to one another. The Black Lives Matter event at Oak Park and River Forest High School on February 27th, which was limited to Black students, has only done harm. The struggle to prove that Black Lives Matter has always been a rainbow push effort. So this is not the time to close the door on progress made over the years. We must walk hand in hand as a human race and eliminate exclusion and promote inclusion. The leaders of the closed door meeting now have an opportunity to show all of us how to make something good out of a wrong decision. Say you're sorry and come together and begin something great for all of our kids. The restorative justice community believes that this situation would need to convene a circle. Circles are used to discuss issues that cause a problem with the offender and the offended. Circles are used to come up with a solution to the problem.
Hey, you know, if I beat you in the face, would you be okay if we sit in a circle and talk about it? Would that help?
They do that. They do that.
Do you know what this is, Leslie?
Wow. This is a new trend people. That any type of argument or disagreement, they hold a peace circle in order to resolve the conflict.
And I've heard of restorative justice. I know the concept, and I even know it within the confines of Black liberation and the Black Lives Movement. It is not, as far as I know, let's all sit down together. Am I missing something on restorative justice, or is this really the nature of restorative justice as a approach. I got to look at
that.
Well,
yeah, the peace circle is a branch of the restorative justice. So the peace circle, yes, we all do sit down and collectively sit together and talk about the issue or the conflict. But restorative justice is an alternative, basically, to consequences. That's what that theory is about.
This has nothing to do with that. I'll read another comment from a parent, Ruth Lazarus, a white woman. She says, with all due respect to Representative Ford, I think you and unfortunately many others have misunderstood this event and are angry with a principle that we should be applauding. This wasn't a Black Lives Matter rally, which of course would have been open to everyone. This event offered an opportunity for African American students to express themselves and be heard in a safe space. These sorts of groups and conversations are so important for all of our young people. It saddens me deeply to see people feeling threatened by something we should be excited about. Yep. If we are going to get angry, we should be angry that students of all races do not have the same experience at OPRF. We should be wanting to understand why that is so that we can do something about it. People in this town pay lip service to wanting to address the achievement gap, but when our principal tries to do something meaningful that could offer hope for change, he gets attacked. Too sad.
I couldn't agree more. Yeah.
This is the definition of restorative justice. It's an approach to justice focused on the needs of the victim and the offenders as well as the involved community. Instead of simply satisfying an abstract legal principle or punishing the offender, victims take the active role in the process while offenders are encouraged to take responsibility for their actions and repair the harm they've done by apologizing, returning stolen money or community service, etc. So from that standpoint, I get it, but this meeting was not – the white people that didn't get in and bitched and complained and had these anonymous letters, they weren't trying to go in and take accountability for their actions.
No.
That wasn't at all – so this woman saying like the restorative justice is being a disservice towards – that's just so a mis-equivocation. It's nuts.
No, and in fact, and I don't want to judge, but some of those students might have been coming to just to get out of class because they would miss two periods.
Right.
And honestly, I'm not sure that they're ready for the conversation that we were having.
They weren't.
They could have been coming in support, but you are not really ready to have this conversation because these issues are so deeply rooted in our history. And another thing that saddened me, too, is to hear some of those students talking about how they feel disenfranchised. And the lady in the article made that comment about having a different experience than all of the other students in the building. But, you know, 30 years ago when I was in high school, similar experience. Why hasn't anything changed in 30 years? This is huge. This is a huge issue. Mm-hmm. And the Listen to the Teacher panel, they talk about their current experiences and their high school experiences. Not a lot has changed.
Yeah.
And to hear just the parents of what they want, the immediate dismissal of and severe punishment of Principal Rouse. This is what gets me is that if this is what they always say, I can only think that if a white person did such a despicable act as to not allow black students into an assembly, what are you talking about right now? You know how many things black students aren't allowed into by the sheer system that they have to work their way around? You sound like an idiot.
Yes. Daily.
What are the white people getting together to talk about?
And, you know, you hit it out of the head, though, Tia. It's the 2 day. It's the two classes. I guarantee you that some bunch of white people are like, oh, all the black kids got to skip two classes, and I wasn't allowed, Mom. Mm-hmm, I swear to God. Those black people got something, two free classes, that we white people didn't get, and I'm upset about it, and I'm going to call the Tribune. The fuck? I honestly sometimes, I don't want to say like I hate myself and white people because I know people like accuse me of that. Like my mom's white, my best friends are white. But Jesus, we white people are the worst sometimes.
So what, obviously, I can only imagine that this has been a devastating blow to the students that were on such a high from having this great experience at the assembly. And what have you seen and what have you been telling them? Kind of what's the atmosphere in school right now, you know, just surrounding the things that they hoped would come out of this? And it seems as though your principal wanted the plan was to allow white kids to have the same safe space to talk about how they were feeling and to then after those individual discussions were had, come together and have a larger one. You know, where do things stand right now? Obviously he's on the defense at this point, and what can we do to support him, I guess, would be my next question.
Yeah,
absolutely. Well, we had hoped to continue these conversations. I'm not sure from the pushback that he's received that we will be able to. He did have the support of the superintendent before he proceeded with this event. The superintendent was actually present for the forum. And I honestly don't feel like he has anything that he needs to apologize for, except for maybe communicating it a little bit better before the event happened. But other than that, he hosted a very proactive event, and these talks should continue. So I'm hoping that we will be able to continue. I think it's very much needed, and I think desired by the student body. And all of the people who've been complaining about not being invited will have an opportunity to speak their piece if we continue to have these meetings. So that would solve that problem. But I don't know that we will be able to, given all of the negative feedback that has kind of monopolized the attention or the media attention that we've been receiving. So the buzz with the kids, we talk about it all the time in class, or we have been this last week, but the buzz with the kids is the principal going to get fired? They're worried about that because, aww, you know, people are saying we want his job, but I don't foresee that happening, seeing as how he had the support of the superintendent before he proceeded with this. The students are still having dialogues about it openly in class with students, with white students. So I think that's good. I think this actually was a catalyst for conversations to be had in class. I don't necessarily know what's going to happen in the future with this, but I hope that we'll be able to continue this dialogue because it's obviously still needed. Yeah. And racial tensions are clearly still an issue in 2015.
Obviously, because these parents wouldn't be reacting this way if mm-hmm. it wasn't. And
yeah.
I mean, they must have PTA and that sort of avenue for parents to speak. Is there anything set up for parents to talk about this? What, you know, because feel like
there hasn't been a formal response from our principal to all of this media attention. So I think we're kind of waiting to see how he's going to respond. There is going to be a board meeting next week. Mm. The teachers do plan to come and show support for the principal at this meeting. But, you know, the first maybe half hour or so of our board meetings is open to the public. So it's open to the public. So people can come out and publicly speak about what issues or whatever they want to state. So, I'm sure at the board meeting, there are going to be tons of people that are coming forward to speak about their opinion on this issue. Mm. Now, if the principal is going to say something at the board meeting, I'm not sure. He has not indicated that he is going to have a formal statement ready for the board meeting, but I don't know. I would think that after the board meeting, maybe there might be some parent groups that would get together and invite him to come to the meetings and speak again about the events of what happened and explain how it came about. Because I think if everyone had a clear understanding of what the meeting was supposed to be, then that would ease some of their anxiety. I still don't think that the community really understands what it was about.
Right, I don't think they do either. I think that they definitely have been a little misled, and mm-hmm. and I don't know if, because, you know, the thing that happens with no offense to the white people listening, but, you know, white people like to double down on their stupidity often, mm-hmm. and they don't like when they're shown that they have completely misconstrued what's going on and that they're wrong. It will be interesting to see if you can even get to the point where they'll listen to mm-hmm. not even to say reason, but just to facts. I mean, just to, you know, take their blinders off and stop, mm-hmm. as I say all the time, it's not about you, white people. It's not always about you.
It's not about you.
You know what's
even, Drew, can you do
you
one
know
of
what's
those?
Even stranger?
What's that?
Is that when you have that white, when you have the opportunity for the white kids to meet and talk about these things, the parents that are complaining, they're not even going to want their kid at it.
No. Of course. Right. I don't want to teach in class.
Right.
No. Mm-hmm. You're not going to teach my kid anti-white shit. No, he's out of there. And as you see, you talked about the educator, the principal, the students. Are there any repercussions for you? Or are you having any troubles with students asking you questions? How have you been handling things?
So, like, it's come up in most of my classes because the students are asking me, is the principal going to get fired? And then that leads to a discussion about what happened. And, of course, I have students in my class that are white. So they're, you know, asking, well, why was it open only to black students? Some of them have said, I would have loved to have shown my support. And I said, well, at this time, you can support us by, because we had Black Lives Matter t-shirts for sale during that week. Mm-hmm. You can support us by buying a t-shirt. You can support us by understanding that we need this time right now to ourselves to discuss issues that we are having. And when we're ready, we will come to you with those issues so that you can have a better understanding of what place we're in. And you'll be able to sympathize because you will never be able to empathize. And most of them are able to understand that. And what they're hearing at home and what they're reading in the paper is not giving them that understanding.
Right.
No, it's like you said, it's very cut and dry. It's principal had an event. Black people were the only ones allowed. White people excluded. Like, that's an inappropriate bullet point. I'm glad to hear that the action of the individuals that are complaining, that's being used as sort of a, I don't want to say again, a teachable moment, but that some people are at least understanding the context of that. As a white person, I, in my own evolution of understanding and you know, just myself, I can very much put myself in those white students' shoes and question, well, why wasn't I allowed? I want to be there. I'd like to support. You know, I know a black person. I like black people. Why can't I be there? I would have been in that same sort of – and I would have needed somebody to really explain it like you just did, because I wouldn't have got it otherwise.
Yeah, and even some of our black students are complaining, like, I was really upset that my white friends couldn't come. I wanted my white friends to be able to come. So it's not just, you know, white people that wanted to support us. It's black people who have, you know, white friends that want them to be able to be a part of it.
Yeah. And so, and sorry if this is too inappropriate or direct, but did you guys make a distinction between black American, African American, and like Latino, brown? Are there people of color that aren't necessarily black at your school, and were they invited?
So, yeah, the principal originally said only black students would be allowed, but I think that, see, this is where the communication piece came in. I think maybe earlier that day he opened it up to any student of color. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there was that questionable piece of the biracial students, whether they were allowed in. Right. So that's when he said, okay, well, just any student of color. So even students who are, you know, mixed black and white were allowed to come in. But
yeah.
Clearly, and then there was a whole issue of students being physically told at the door, no, you cannot come in,
right?
The white students. But
yeah, I mean, and I hear, you know, the thing is, unfortunately, you know, as black people, we rarely get the chance to, you know, stumble in our figuring our way through new spaces. Mm. We don't get that. That's one more thing we're never afforded.
No,
you know,
be perfect.
We have to be perfect all the time, which is just ridiculous. Of course, hindsight's 20/20, and there's plenty of things we can always look back and assess. And I'm sure that you would have done that, as you do with any situation. You look back, you assess, you decide what worked, what didn't work, and you move forward from there. And you're not even getting the opportunity to do that because you have to defend what good things you already did do.
Defend inappropriately.
Right. I did want to mention a friend of mine, Monty Keith Henry, who actually was quoted by Yahoo Parenting about this story. He's diversity trainers based in New York City. He's also Jamaican. Big up, Imani. He says that the approach that you guys took is not a newfangled idea. He's a New York City based diversity trainer who heads the consulting practice OD for the People. It's done in unions, caucuses, and professional organizations and associations. It's not only about comfort, but creating leadership and to just have a moment to strategize about ideas in a safe environment where you can talk in shorthand and not have to explain everything, end quote. Imani, who is of Jamaican descent, grew up in Boston and still recalls the impact made upon him by a special gathering held just for Haitian students at his high school one afternoon to celebrate the news that longtime dictator Baby Doc Duvalier was forced out of Haiti. I was not invited to the assembly, which I believe was announced only in Creole, he recalls, but to walk by the auditorium in this incredibly historic moment and for the students to have had that space to do that was very powerful to me. I'm 45 years old, and I will always remember the cheering that I heard as I walked by. So, you know, he says, what often happens today is that such sacred spaces are squashed when public funding is involved, as it often forces inclusivity. I understand that, and it's a dilemma, he says, but as a result, the very organizations that were created to empower the disempowered wind up having the opposite effect. Something Henry says he's often seen in student gay straight alliances. The gay students can't find any solidarity, he explains, because the straight allies don't understand their thoughts about oppression and say, but everything's better now. And he says in the case of the OPRF assembly in Illinois, Henry notes, the offended white parents, rather than feeling entitled on behalf of their kids, might have been wise to see the events as a chance to offer solidarity. What would have been helpful is maybe to have asked after the black students met, What do you need from us? Mm. What should we be doing? He says, what if the white parents had said we should stand with this principal? How powerful that would have been for those students, end quote.
Absolutely.
Yep. So,
yeah.
Totally. Shout out to you, Imani. He's awesome anyways. Mm. And he also runs some, speaking of gentrification, some anti-gentrification programs in my old neighborhood of Flatbush, the Bush in Brooklyn, which is seeing some just devastating gentrification right now. I paid $37 for a steak in Brooklyn the other day. I still can't get over it.
I can tell you.
I still cannot get over it.
Where do we go to a show at that theater?
Man, I don't even know what
the
to King's say about
Croft
that.
Theater.
Listen, so they opened this. I'm going to just tell this really quick story because it's really hilarious. Two blocks from my house is this old movie theater called the King's Theater. It used to be a movie. Like when I was a kid, it was a just ramshackle, you know, rundown movie theater. They'd show like whatever movies there. But it had been in disrepair for like 20 years or so as gentrification has started moving into the neighborhood. And I say gentrification, Drew will tell you himself, when we used to take, when we first started dating and we would take the train to see my sister, it would be like all the white people would get off the train and then we'd get to where I would be getting off and all the black people would get off the train, and slowly but surely we'd start visiting and I'm like, where are all these white people going and why are they getting off at my train stop? Because they live there now. I was outside my sister's house the other day. Some dude was stretching after his run. I was like, what the fuck is going on here? So anyway, so they have renovated this beautiful theater back to its original, restored it to its 1920s glory, and it's beautiful and wonderful. Diana Ross was the opening show at it and everything. But there is no place to eat around this theater. So they have these shows going there now. It's a beautiful theater. White people are starting to live in the neighborhood now, but you know, it's still in flux, I would say. And, so my sister said, there's all these white people there coming to these shows dressed all nicely and like going to the Jamaican beef patty store to eat because that's all that's there to eat.
They're so cultured.
I'll take a juicy
beef and my suit
and
tie.
Cocoa bread and a cola champagne. Thank you. No, it's freaking hilarious. So I just think it's funny. Let's move on to Ferguson. I'm going to let Ricky lead this part of the discussion. We've got some resignations, obviously, coming after the DOJ's... what do they call it? Scathing DOJ report, Ricky, yes?
The honest DOJ report?
Yeah.
That's really just the best way to put it. The accurate DOJ report. Yeah. I don't give a shit that it's staggering or scathing. It is what it is.
It is.
Fix it.
That's right. So who resigned most recently? I know Chief's out, yeah? Police
yeah,
chief.
Yeah, Chief's out.
Yeah. Who else? City manager, right? That idiot is gone now too.
Mm.
I think
the court clerk
is gone. I think we had a judge too. Yeah, one of the judges. I want to say.
Yeah, the judge who owed like 18 in back taxes, but was talking about accountability. You sack of shit.
What an asshole!
Oh,
honest to goodness.
You know, that's such a white way out of things, too. Like, oh, the shit's hitting the fan.
I'm out.
I'm going to bail.
I'm going to resign.
Wait a minute. Civil liability? Out of here.
They have to resign because then they can't get jobs if they get fired. So they got to resign. Mind you, they're all getting a year salary, $109,000 and $120,000 each in salary, severance, plus medical coverage during that year as well, I might add, as part
Can
of their packages.
Can I point out that even racism has a safety net?
Yeah.
These people,
yeah, their privilege so protects fuck, them yeah. even in that.
You got a safety net. You got racist. This is racism insurance. Holy fuck!
It is.
Oh my god!
It's insanity. My problem is who's taken over as the number three police officer in Ferguson. Now, mind you, number one, number two, and number four all resigned because they were specifically noted in the Department of Justice report for their heinous behavior. But yeah. Number three, he's cool. I don't. Yeah, that's not justice. Just FYI, Ferguson. And if I have not, I don't think I have met a more delusional individual than the mayor of Ferguson yet in my life.
That guy is. I don't know what he's drinking, but hell.
He's drunk. He's drinking white privilege.
Yeah, but I mean, I hate to say it this way, but is he mentally ill? Like, I really, I don't know if he has all his faculties.
I
don't know how a sane person can say them.
I think it's not that he's mentally ill. I think that he's being fed some things, and he doesn't even understand. He's literally not equipped.
But that's my point. He's not equipped.
He's above his pay grade. He's swimming over his head.
He's above his intellectual grade.
Yeah, by a lot.
It is not his pay grade. He is dumb. That is what I'm trying to get at. Like, if he was taking an IQ test, the score would be rather low.
Yeah, he was the one that said right away, as soon as the DOJ report came out, I was like, well, let's not, you know, paint everyone with the same brush, and, you know, let's take this with a grain of salt, and this is only a few inches. We don't know if this is – we don't know what they measured, and, you know, come on, let's have some – take this lightly, please.
Yeah, yeah, but it's – it doesn't matter who's in charge at this point. You have a government agency that has a culture of abuse, and the thing is guess what? Even after the DOJ report – they still need jobs.
Yep.
And so, mm-hmm. until they ban them, they're going to continue to do the same shit that they've been doing because mm-hmm. they still need jobs. And if they don't get the revenue, they don't have jobs. You've put – even those good officers when put – who – well, I'm not even going to call them good officers. Officers who wouldn't otherwise act racist right. outside of a racist environment.
Right. Yeah, and I do, you know, I was watching this thing that was talking about how, you know, because there's a couple of larger things at issue. Obviously, I'm a staunch believer in always talking about the root cause of all of these issues, which is white supremacy. You know, Ta-Nehisi Coates says there's nothing wrong with black people or the black community that the complete annihilation of white supremacy will not cure. That's a fact. So, you know, we all need to come to terms with that and just realize that fact and work as hard as we can towards that ideal. But independent of that, I will say that there's this idea with regard to policing that, you know, police are trained to do what they're trained to do. So if they're trained with weapons and military grade weaponry and armament and equipment, and that's what they train and drill and drill and drill and drill for, that's what they're going to do. When you train and drill and drill and drill on de-escalation and talking people down and negotiation and critical thinking, guess what? Then they're going to do that. So my whole thing is that I still have not heard this cry from anyone, including from the Department of Justice report, in my opinion, because it was purely factual and stating facts. I don't think any of the recommendations that I've heard have even gotten to the point of saying, like, well, okay, I'm willing to concede that probably the entire police force of Ferguson, Missouri is not, you know, raging racist. I'm willing as a human being, just knowing humans as I do, to say that. I don't think that's true. However, we do have to look at what standards we're using to hire, train, and continually evaluate these people.
Yeah.
So when is that going to happen? And that's why when I say that this mayor is delusional, it's like, this isn't a personnel issue. There's this idea that this is a personnel issue. It's not. It doesn't matter.
If you keep the
system the same, I don't care who you plug in there. Because you could put 50% black police officers into Ferguson. Keep their training the same, keep their drills the same, keep their accountability the same, and the outcome is going to be the same.
Exactly.
Because it's not about the individual people. It's just human nature. It's about if I'm taught to do something and I'm told this is what I'm supposed to do, this is who the enemy is, we're at war, this is what they look like, this is what we do to them, this is how we're supposed to treat them, they're going to do that.
Right.
So I don't, my two things that came from the DOJ report is like, well, I hope we don't have to have a fucking DOJ report for every goddamn city in this country to see that this is a problem. Because there ain't shit that is special about Ferguson. Not a goddamn thing. So that's the first thing. And secondarily, okay, great. We have some tangible things and know statistically what's going on and why it's wrong and how continually black bodies are made to pay.
Oops, sorry.
Now look at Pebbles. Scott. Pebbles acting a fool out there. You know, when are we going to start talking about systemic changes?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Ricky, what do we have to do? What has to happen?
We have to good fucking question. Cuz I don't think people, this is the thing. We in like even black people do this because we've internalized this behavior.
Mm-hmm.
But there's this expectation that in order for black lives to be worth more or worth equally, that they have to be better people. That's not how this works. If you're born, you take a child and you put them in the situations that you put, that you generally subject black people to, regardless of their race, creed, color, they're going to have the same problems. This is common fucking sense that we keep ignoring. Like, what do you do when you take away jobs from people?
Yeah.
David mm-hmm. Brooks.
Yes.
You know, how do you talk about accountability, but you've never held yourself accountable? How do you talk about the splinter in someone else's eye when you have a log in yours?
Right.
That yeah. you've yet to address.
And you see this all the time. You saw that this week. I made note that Anthony Robinson's mother, she's a white woman. He's a biracial child. She became a black mother just like that. Her whiteness mm-hmm. was stripped of her. We saw this with Bill de Blasio. The minute he yep. talked about his black son, he ceased to be a white man and was treated mm-hmm. as a black one. You know, it's a very interesting thing when you say that. And it's very true that the circumstance, the outcome is already foretold by the system. So I don't know what happens. I mean, I'm radical. So I'm always mm-hmm. about the, you know, why do we need the police at all? That's mm-hmm. That's my question I ask constantly. What purpose do they serve? And the purposes that we need them to serve do not require them to be done. So that's where I go. That's where my mind goes. I know that's pretty radical. And obviously, we have a lot of money and investment in infrastructure that's not going to necessarily make that happen. But that's where we need to be thinking. If not going as radical as that, we should be thinking about smaller police forces, mm-hmm. less police interaction, fewer instances where they need to be involved. I'm reminded of a friend of mine, actor Benga, who played Chris on The Wire. He was telling me this story. He was in Brooklyn, and he was driving, and a guy and him had kind of gotten into some words. You know, he had cut the guy off or whatever, and they had kind of gotten into some words, and they came up to a stoplight, and the guy got out of his car and came up and started swearing at Benga and his assistant, who's a woman that was in the car with him, and Benga kind of like threw the car in park, and he got out, and he's like, "What are you talking about? You know, don't talk to her that way. She's a female. I don't appreciate that." You know, they started, you know, doing whatever. And the guy kept coming at him, and Benga punched him, just like socked him right in the face. It was right in front of a firehouse. So the firemen come out, police call, they all come over, and they're like, "What happened here?" And so everybody's telling them, you know, that other guy got out of his car. He approached the guy. He kept advancing. Now, technically, Benga hit him first. So technically, he would be in the wrong. But the witnesses were there, and they were like, yeah, da-da-da-da-da. The police officer came over to the guy that was hit, and he was like, "Is that what happened?" He's like, "Yeah, that's what happened." And he came up to Benga, and he's like, "Hey, man, I'm sorry. I let my, you know, I got heated. It got the better of me." And Benga's like, "I'm really sorry I hit you. I just didn't, you know, I was kind of concerned. You were coming at, you know, my assistant. She's a female. I didn't appreciate that." And they squashed it. Everybody left, and they left and parted ways. So here's a situation. The police were there, but they allowed the community to discuss what was going on and have the situation not escalate further. And it could have went a whole different direction. Legally, mm-hmm. That's the real thing I want to say, is that legally it could have gone a whole different way. So I'm reminded when I always think about that situation, because there's so many instances where we don't need the police there.
Mm-hmm.
They don't need to be called, white people, I'm talking to you. They don't need to be called for every infraction. Yeah. We talked about on the Interracial John yesterday about a garbage man who's having to spend the next 12 weekends in jail because he violated an ordinance by collecting the garbage before 7 o'clock in the morning. And the white people in the neighborhood that he collects the garbage from call the police on him. It's a noise ordinance. This is a father of four who has to go to jail for the next 12 weekends for doing his job, picking up trash that they wouldn't even want their children to do.
You get jail time for a noise ordinance? Why not a ticket?
Yeah. Why not 12 weeks of jail for a noise ordinance? For him being there.
Yeah.
How about that? How about you punish the company that he's representing?
That's what I said. And I was like, them, why is let he them punish held responsible? Him accordingly. Exactly.
Was he doing his job? Exactly.
Let them fire him and you deal with them. No, he's going to jail because they called the cops. So anyways, yeah, I don't know. But I think that we're going to continue to see more resignations coming out of Ferguson. I don't know how they're going to not disband at this point. I don't see it possible. I know the municipal court has ostensibly been shut down. They have no docket and they have no one to report. So I don't know what's going to happen with that. And I don't know how much longer the police department can survive. However, I will move on to what Ricky really is going to talk about, which is the police shooting that happened this week. Because that, of course, throws a large wrench into the potential disbanding of the police, because now they're seen as needed because the shooting occurred. So fill us in what happened and the varying stories that are out there and kind of what the deal is, Ricky.
Okay. Basically, there was a shooting Wednesday night, Thursday morning in front of the Ferguson Police Department. Two officers were hit. One hit in the shoulder, the other hit in the face. Both are recovering. Neither one had, they're not lethal injuries. And from the police officers, or from the Ferguson PD's own estimation, which is fucking unlikely, and I'll talk about that in a second, but they were shot with a handgun. They were shot with a round from a handgun.
From how far?
From how far? Yeah, from 125 yards away.
Is that now, even, like, possible through physics?
Yes and no.
Okay.
It would be possible for a bullet to travel that far. Mm-hmm. And it wouldn't be unlikely that it would still be deadly, or at least powerful enough to still penetrate the skin. But anything after 30 yards with a handgun, there's no way in hell you're accurate.
That was what I meant.
You're even remotely accurate. No
way. Just wind alone.
125 yards away.
Yeah.
The odds are, even if you fired that, that's not who you meant to hit.
No way. Uh-uh. Just wind alone would change the trajectory of the bullet that from that far away from a handgun.
Just to put it in perspective.
I don't know shit about guns.
You're talking about a football field from the back of one end zone to the back of the other end zone, from goalpost to goalpost, 120 yards. You couldn't, honestly, to hit an action, like Ricky's saying, to hit, let's just say you had one individual standing 120 yards away. I think you'd be hard-pressed to hit one individual. You couldn't hit an individual. All you could do is shoot at a line of police officers and hope to hit one in a sort of, potluck situation. They weren't aiming for, from 120. Mm-hmm. And Ricky, if I'm not mistaken, didn't the police at least suggest or intimate that this was related to the protest action that was taking place, that the gunfire may or may not have come from the protesters? Almost sort of say like, hey, this is some retaliatory stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Didn't they start with that right away?
They did. And I actually have a clip of that I wanted to share. Let's see. Right? Here it is.
Abuses in the city's policing and municipal court. St. Louis County Police Chief John Belmar said he believed the officers were directly targeted.
I don't know who did the shooting, to be honest with you right now, but somehow they were embedded in that group of folks. Now, I would have to make an assumption right now that based on the fact that these officers were standing together, and there were several officers standing right there together when this happened, that these were shots that were parallel to the ground, not up in the air, or not at, they weren't skip shots. And I would have to make an assumption that these shots were directed exactly at my police officers.
One officer was shot in the face. The other was hit in the shoulder.
So, I mean,
he didn't have any information to make any of those statements.
No.
No.
Like, you can actually get ballistics and actual information to say some stupid-ass shit like that. What is wrong with these people?
But it's not even that. It's a bold-faced fucking lie.
That's what I mean. He's just making up.
At the moment that it happened, if anyone... Have you guys seen the video?
I saw the video. Yeah, I did see it.
Okay.
But you could tell it's coming from behind the protesters. They turned to look.
No, they had the guns in two places. They had the guns up the hill, where everyone said the shot came from.
Right.
And then they had their guns on the protesters. They sent cars up that hill. They knew where the fuck the shot came from.
And Ricky,
that was a bold-faced lie.
There's even one of the anonymous people I follow. There was a transcript or an audio recording of the, I guess the police scanners are, you know, like public. There's like
they record it.
And the police scanners immediately after the shooting identify it as up on the hill. That's where they're saying to go, you know?
Yeah. And again, from this, and this is my fear that people are ignoring the safety of the protesters, because from that distance, your bullet's going to travel regardless. These aren't rifles. You're talking about a handgun, and most handguns, the barrel is, although it's tight, there's still a little give there, and that's why it's so inaccurate. So 125 yards away, you're shooting at someone. Either they were aiming to hit the Ferguson Police Department building, which is bullshit, or they were aiming to their left, which was the protesters.
Right. That's
who the target was. Because something doesn't add up. Handgun, 125 yards. Either they were trying to shoot someone across the street, and they missed, and it ended up hitting them. But there's...
See, I don't know about
it. It's fucking science.
I don't know if they were aiming for the protesters, but I do. Maybe I'm just cynical. I think it was a provocateur, an anarchist, you know, a white supremacist that is trying to get the police to react in a more aggressive, responsive way than killing people unarmed in the streets. And how do you do that? You take potluck shots at them. You start firing at them, you know, randomly, and they're going to get real, even more itchy trigger finger, you know.
Mm-hmm. A more better way than to create the propaganda to instill the fear in the protesters,
right.
Causing the disruption.
Mm-hmm. But I think it's been interesting seeing the coverage post this shooting in comparison to the shooting of the two police officers in New York, where I feel like it was so everybody was just ready to blame the protesters in New York. This time, everyone's like, pump your brakes, bitch, because
we were here. We told you what happened.
And we're not trying to fall for that bullshit again.
So Ferguson PD, bitch, you tried it.
I told you, everybody, they all trying it.
Bitch, you tried it.
Oh, God. Yes. So we're going to have all those clips that Ricky showed, and also video of the video that is of the shooting itself. Yeah, as well. We'll have that on the show notes. So where do things stand at this point? I'm assuming there'll be an investigation, obviously, into the shooting itself. But as I understand, they served a warrant, or actually a warrantless search of the home of a protester shortly afterwards. No understanding why this specific person was targeted in the search at all. And then released the individuals. So I don't know what the purpose of that was. And you're very right to be concerned about that. And I've been saying this from day one, is that, you know, I think there has been a general idea that, okay, now that these things have been shown to light, that things have gotten better in Ferguson. And that is not the case. Things have only gotten worse in Ferguson. Power has never been given up without a fight, and they will be fighting tooth and nail through this entire process. So, definitely want to keep our thoughts and prayers with the people of Ferguson and the protesters in Ferguson who continue to hold it down night after night, day after day in the streets. Yeah. We wouldn't have a movement to speak of without them, so they are always in my personal thoughts.
There's just no way that you hit what you're aiming at at 125 yards with a fucking handgun.
Nope.
As a veteran, I'll tell you right off the bat, that shit's not possible.
Well, I'll tell you who I'll blame. I have decided to blame Bradley Cooper. So.
Please explain.
I'm going to go with Bradley Cooper. You know, somebody saw that American Sniper movie, got them all riled up. I'm just saying, if we could blame Waka Flocka Flame,
I'm with you,
then I can blame Bradley Cooper. It's only fair.
Don't blame Bradley Cooper.
It's only fair.
No, I don't think it's fair. I think it's accurate. I think that's exactly what happened. That American Sniper movie is full of propaganda.
I have a very white guy that has signed on to my theory. It is official. Stamped. Mm-hmm. Moving on to Selma 50, which happened this weekend. Interesting. Tia, did you see very much of the coverage of the Jubilee celebration of the Selma march and crossing of the bridge?
Just the brief. I didn't see any videos. I just saw the brief coverages from the internet. So I know they all marched together over the bridge.
Yeah,
that we need to change the name of.
Definitely need to do that. I'm ever the event planner in me, just saw so much wrong with everything that was going on in Selma.
Can we start with Vanilla Ice? Ricky, you beat me to it.
Yeah,
so much wrong.
I blame BET, but even independent of that, it just, like, they didn't have food vendors, they didn't have trash receptacles, they didn't have any clue that this number of people were going to be gathering there, which makes no sense to me since everybody was going. It was a lot of things like that where you could see that, you know, it fell into this very strange middle range of the city selling out most things that shouldn't have been, and at the same time not being nearly as prepared as they should have been, considering they sold out as much as they did. Uh-huh. So it was a very weird amalgam to me of all of those kinds of things, which happens a lot when you see, you know, old guard and new guard and George W. Bush and Denise Nash in a room together. I mean, none of it even makes fucking sense, to be perfectly honest. So, you know, it's very strange to me. Of course, President Obama gave a pretty good speech. One of his better speeches, actually, in my opinion, in terms of civil rights. I thought he hit some things he had not hit before, but I chalked that up to his lame duck blackness of late. Because he'd been wearing it pretty tough these last couple months. It's only going to get froggier from here, I think, on his part.
I just want to know where this was, like, fucking 6 years ago.
Yeah, he couldn't do it 6 years ago, though. Because, you know.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Because right, he had four, to say, because I won both of them. He couldn't say that if he did it 6 years ago. But you're right. It would have been nice to come a little bit sooner. Yeah, it would have been nice for it to come a little bit sooner. But, you know, we still got some time. We got some time. Yeah. We got some things we could still do. We got Loretta Lynch up in the house now. We're going to get her in place. And she don't take no mess. So I think that's going to be interesting. I think she's going to be a lot more difficult for Congress to deal with than Holder. So that's going to be interesting to see. Because, you know, bitches don't play. And she's a tough cookie anyway. So the whole situation, I think, is going to be very interesting when she gets confirmed. I will start to mention again, she is literally the longest attorney general confirmation since they've been recording this. We're, I think, at 122 days now since she has been nominated. It's getting fucking ridiculous at this point. But hopefully that in the next week or so, she'll be installed and doing her job. What did you think of the president's speech, Ricky, and kind of, you know, the whole shenanigans? I mostly followed on Twitter because I really didn't want to hear all these fucking bullshit-ass reports on TV. So I was just following my usual brethren of people just to see what was going on down there. But what did you think?
It's about fucking time. It is about damn time. That was the speech I expected from Obama in 2012.
Yeah.
2012, 2013. Okay, I'll take it. I mean, you know, I wish it would have come sooner, but, you know, I'll take it. I wish it would have came at the State of the Union when all he had to do was mention the poor. hey, this is how we fixed the middle class.
Just once.
All those people that used to be middle class and are now poor, we moved them back into the middle class.
Yeah.
You know, was it just, you know, whether while you're still working on that as far as white supremacy, economics helps.
Yep.
It really does. It's so invaluable to the Black Lives Matter movement, to the end of white supremacy. It's putting black people in an economic position where they feel like they can win.
Yeah. And I think it's funny. It's almost like he's been listening to our show, Ricky, because he talked, as you often do, about the ideals of this country and what it means to live up to those ideals without sugarcoating the fact that the people that wrote them did not live up to those ideals. I thought that was a really big point that I don't think that a modern president has made, probably any, actually. So I appreciated that part of his speech as well. And just this bringing in the piece about economics and how important it is. And also citing Selma as a war site, you know, when he puts it on the same level as Antietam and Gettysburg and, you know, all of these other places. I thought that was really important. Seneca Falls, he puts it with Concord and Lexington. You know, that's huge to just have in the lexicon to say, yeah, this too is a site of war. This too is a site of lives lost. This too is a site of something that should not have happened, but that made our nation better. So I Absolutely. Think that that's really a huge thing. He had a few too many Bible quotes for my taste, but you know, that's just me.
That's his cup of tea.
That is his thing.
I get it.
That's his thing.
But
I get that. And his emphasis on the we, I thought was really good as well. I thought it was very good imagery to use. You know, we the people, we shall overcome. Yes, we can. Because that word isn't owned by a single person. Everyone owns we. So I like that cast that he put on it. My girl, Ashley Yates, also known as Brown Blaze on Twitter.
Oh, she was there?
You know, she everywhere. It's my girl.
Yeah, that's true. Ashley is everywhere.
She everywhere. But yeah. She had.
I think she had a couple weeks after Mike Brown was shot, she was on the show with Larry.
Oh, was she? Oh, yeah. She's.
Yeah, she was on our show.
I want to talk to you all a little bit about this movie, Selma. Like, this past December, I actually spoke with the lead actor in the film, David Oyelowo, and he talked about playing MLK and Selma. He also talked about the parallels in the film.
Mark Lamont
to
Hill.
Ferguson.
But actually, take a look at what he's going to talk about.
We wrapped this film on the 3rd of July, and. By the 9th of August, Michael Brown was murdered. Yeah. And, you know, as Ava was in the edit, you know, we're talking, saying, didn't we just shoot this stuff? Didn't we just film, you know, the tear gas and cops saying this is an unlawful assembly, you know, all this kind of stuff. And as the film started to come together in the edit, we felt that, look, we have a film here that maybe is a blueprint for how to go forward in light of Ferguson.
Ashley, to what extent has Selma and movements like that, actions like that, been influential? How have they informed the work you all have been doing on the ground for a very long time, but certainly since August 9th? Ashley, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me, Mark?
Yeah, now I can. I was asking, what's the relationship between the actions we saw back then and the stuff you all are doing now?
Sadly, the relationship is we're seeing history repeat itself. You know, we've heard, you know, the Reverend speak at length today about the Voting Rights Act being disseminated and, you know, allowed to relapse and nobody really standing up for that. And we're seeing, you know, the disenfranchisement of voters across the nation, not only in the South, but we're seeing it, you know, in the up South. We're seeing it in Missouri, which is technically not the South. People wonder how in a city, Ferguson, of 70% black people, you know, the entire administration is white. Well, that's because voting disenfranchisement is very, very real. The methods don't look the same as they did in the Jim Crow South, but they're definitely utilizing tactics to make sure that people, you know, don't get their voices heard. Unfortunately, you know, marching and having people lost like Jimmie Lee Jackson, like, you know, Mike Brown is our Jimmie Lee Jackson. Like, we're still seeing this very real history living and repeating itself today. We're seeing the tear gas, like you spoke of. You know, we're seeing people oppressed for standing up for their rights. We're seeing people that not only have learned from those movements, though, right? So we've studied them. We realized that history is repeating itself and that we can't allow that to happen. But we've also learned from the mistakes of that movement. So we're also making sure that we're not, you know, adhering to respectability politics and some of those things that Obama spoke about in, you know, the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington. We're making sure that when we speak about black liberation, we're talking about all black people and not just a certain subsector of, you know, who white America thinks is, you know, who white America sees as acceptable in society. We're talking about everyone. We're not asking for our existence to be validated by being good black people. We're demanding that our existence is validated just by living because we are human beings. So we're definitely influenced by, you know, civil rights leaders of, you know, the past that are still doing the work today. And we're also learning from them firsthand and also just by studying history.
That was Ashley Yates, just giving a little comparison, if you will, to lessons learned in Selma, which I think is great to just bring into the fore when talking about commemorating what happened there. I have a unique take on this. You know, the Voting Rights Act was signed, pushed mostly through because of the death of two white preachers in Selma. One of whom was a preacher of my faith, Unitarian Universalists, James Reeb. And it's very interesting because I know that Unitarians feel very strongly tied to Selma, to the march, because Reverend Reeb died there. But I also know that they're very connected to the fact that, you know, it's only his whiteness that makes it important. And it's very complicated in that, because, you know, when you have Jimmy Lee dying, Jackson dying prior to this, which was the reason why they wanted to continue forward, that would have allowed the march to go on, but it would not necessarily, or I would say the death of the black innocent unarmed man did not lead to the Voting Act being passed. It was only when white America saw a white person killed trying to stand up for these rights that action was taken. And I think that's really an important thing that we continue to bring to the fore, that it's important in this movement that we don't continue to center on whiteness, because it doesn't help our cause. It actually masks it. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't even know what to say, because, you know, they all tried it. All of you tried it.
Yeah, this was... I'm telling you, I don't know what the fuck... White supremacy showed the fuck out this week.
It's like they didn't know what to do with themselves.
Hey, listen, guys, I gotta bounce. I've got an appointment to get to, but it's been a very enjoyable afternoon. Hope I haven't derailed anything. Thanks for having.
No, you've been all right.
Just all right.
Yeah, just all right.
Dang it! Maybe I didn't shout "Not all white people" enough, or "All lives matter." I didn't derail it. But Leslie, I just sent you a link to.
Is there a spot I should be playing from, Drew?
No, I wouldn't say play that. It's a 45-minute long speech. But so Leslie was talking about UUs and our somewhat, I wouldn't say complicated, but white UUs, complicated relationship with, I would say, Black Lives Matter and Selma and just social justice, our principles. And Reverend Mark Morrison Reed was the keynote speaker at the Marching in the Arc of Justice conference, which was in conjunction with Selma. And he spoke very pointedly and vociferously about white UUs and sort of our, what we've done and what we've not done. And in short, his speech was what you and I have talked about, Leslie, that there needs to be a changing of the dynamic in the pews, that, you know, if it's just all white people all the time, you know, there's no relationship, there's no space to be able to be even emotionally connected to the black community. And therefore, when called to act, we're going to be standing for instead of standing with the citizens of color in our community.
Yeah.
So it was a pretty good. I didn't agree with everything. You know, he's still UU, and he's still overly, you know, love will conquer all, and you know, all together kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it definitely. He's black, but as a white UU, and I've struggled with our faith sort of lack of action. I thought this was really good. I thought it was, you know, a lot of what Kenny's talked about, a lot of what the RUUA group talks about. So that was good. It's
worth
a
listen. Says, he has a great book, and I'll put a link to his book as well. But he says, "With whom are you in relationship? or what is in the way you are making that relationship? With whom are you in relationship, a relationship that would compel you to take risk? Being careful and being cautious and hiding our vulnerabilities is not a recipe for change and transformation. That's what he says.
Yeah, he even referenced, as he mentioned, James Reeb, and the outcry was because he was white, but he lived in a predominantly black community. He was working in Boston.
Yeah.
And his wife and kids were going to a predominantly African-American school. So he was vested in the community in a very significant way, so that when people of color said, hey, listen, this is going on, we're going to go to Selma, it wasn't abstract for him. And that's what
he felt called. Yeah.
He felt compelled. And that's what Reverend Reed is describing, that without, or in the absence of just simply relationships with black people, without having any sort of, space where we have friendships and connections with black people, we're not going to feel compelled to act in that same way. And that lack of compelling reason to act is problematic. And it's born out of the lack of I don't call it integration, but are somewhat segregation when it comes to institutions, in particular church.
Yeah, I mean, there's no more segregated day of the week than Sunday morning. That's pretty pretty common. Well, as we are starting to wrap up the Bitch You Tried It edition of the Ferguson Response Network, Drew, I think you just gave us your final thoughts. So, Ms. Marr, what do you have to share with us?
My final thoughts, white America, it is not about you.
Hear, hear. I'm snapping on that one. Snaps. Ricky, what you got for me?
Stop. What the fuck? Honestly. Come on, guys. America, we can fucking do better than this.
Keep
really?
It together, y'all.
Fuck. I make this call to everybody, because this is we have black people that accept this fucking bullshit.
Yep.
This notion that we have to be 10 times better to even get half of what we deserve and a third of what they actually get.
That's true.
Stop. We can do better than this. We really can. You want to be the best country in the world? You want to be able to say that and not know in the back of your mind that it's a bold-faced fucking lie? Can we, please? Can we just do better than this? That's all I'm asking.
Please.
Is that really?
Please.
Is that too much?
Oh, yes. That's good. I like it. For me, I just want to mention Ferguson Response Network will be rolling out actually later today, so you'll start seeing it on the interwebs. Black March Madness, which is going to be running in conjunction with some stupid football tournament that goes on around the same time. And so we have some brackets. We're going to be calling people to do some social justice actions like Black Brunch, some education actions like Books and Breakfast, some online actions. We're going to be doing a Black Podcast Week, getting people to discover and listen to Black podcasts for an entire week. Some real world actions. There's a Black Author Challenge, which is going to challenge people to sign up to read only books by Black authors for an entire year. Wow. It's going to be really cool. And leading up to a final round on April 11th, we're really going to be encouraging local organizations to come together and hold summits in their local municipalities and cities, to come together, to network, to join forces and amplify individual efforts. So be on the lookout for that. It's going to be coming out later today. Again, Black March Madness, and that'll be hashtag BLK March Madness. And again, you can find me on Twitter at Leslie Mack MAC. You can occasionally find Ricky on Twitter at AUADOT.org. Not very often, but occasionally. And you can find Tia, however, on the Twitter at Tia D, as in Doris Marr, M-A-R-R, or on Instagram, do it for the gram, at Tia D Marr as well. And as I said before, you can find the American United Again movement on their website, auamovement.org, or on Facebook, /AUA movement. And you can also go to either of those places to get links to the new Android AUA movement app. I'm so excited for that. And kudos again, Ricky. And you can find us on FergusonResponse.org, or if you're looking for actions, go to FergusonResponse.tumblr.com. And you can search iTunes or Stitcher and just search Ferguson Response and you'll see us come up. And let's see. Next week we have Zelly Imani is going to be on the show next week. I don't know if I even told you about that, Ricky. So
awesome.
Yeah, it's going to be cool. We're going to have him in to talk about whatever fuckery comes up between now and then. I'm sure there'll be plenty of it.
Just not don't fuck up like you did this week, white people.
Please,
don't
white
do
people. We want to go
actually,
back
fuck
to
it, America.
America, please. Get it together, America. Yes,
America.
America. We want to have some. We want to get back to our normal. We get to go in depth on some good deep projects and subjects like we like to, not just deal with this bullshit for an entire episode. And I'm actually going to be going to the Amnesty International General Assembly meeting next weekend, so I'll have some news about that after that is over. And I think that's about it from us. So thanks for joining us once again, and we will talk to you soon.